The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I don't think you move to Florida if you like the way things are going in San Francisco or you like the way things are going in New York City. You don't move to Florida to hope Florida becomes that. You move because you don't like what's going on over there. So I think, number one, we've had a lot of people leave these other states and come to Florida because of the policies of the state legislature and because of the policies of Governor DeSantis, which are built on common sense, by the way. They're not ideological ideas.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Florida Senator Marco Rubio. So we're talking about people moving to red states and blue states a little later in the show from now. I don't know where you're listening right now. Are you tired of the state you're in? You're saying, man, the taxes are killing me, or, oh, my gosh, the crime is insane, or my real estate values are plummeting, or, you know, lots of reasons people relocate. A lot of these more liberal states, a lot of people are now leaving for the South. They're going to Senator Marco Rubio's state. They're going down to Florida. They're going to Texas. They're going to Tennessee. They're going to a lot of those other places. Actually, a lot of Californians are also going to Arizona. But we'll get into that. I'll fill you in on what's happening a little bit later. We'll take a look at why Catholics, and this is an interesting angle. It's not just political, but why there are a lot of Catholics leaving certain states. And it should be a great tale. Hey, speaking of Senator Marco Rubio, let me share with you what I found out today. He just released a new report, too, on the origins of COVID-19 on the pandemic. I don't know if you've seen that or heard about that. It was titled A Complex and Grave Situation. That's a heck of a title, isn't it? A Complex and Grave Situation. The report was 328 pages. It has, it's a political chronology of the pandemic, and his office said that the report presents just a a mountain of circumstantial evidence that COVID-19, that the pandemic, it didn't come from a wet market, but it came from a lab accident in Wuhan, China. And to me, that's perhaps the most reasonable. That makes the most sense to me. Somebody got infected, they got out. You could see how this spread in the area there. The senator said that after years of censorship, there's now growing evidence that some type of lab accident was responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic. And this report, which took 2 years to compile, to edit, to redefine, if you will, to refine, is really a groundbreaking look at what was happening in China during the years and the months leading up to the known outbreak of that pandemic. And the implications are just impossible to ignore. Rubio says that Beijing hid the truth. He said Beijing hid the truth. They're still lying. Right? The report reinforces the need to hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable. Let me share with you a little bit of what he said recently on Fox News. I think he said this yesterday.
Well, and tomorrow we're going to release previously unknown information that builds on an investigation that happened last year. This was not included as part of it, so we want to make sure the public sees it, that begins to outline the things that were going on in China in August, in September of 2019. For example, they had a drill at one of their airports where they specifically said, we are drilling against a novel COVID pandemic, coronavirus, using terminology that wasn't even familiar to anybody until March or February of the next year. You start to see all sorts of internal communications within the Chinese government and researchers about the urgent need for biosecurity measures at both the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the Wuhan Institute of Health. You begin to add a mountain of circumstantial evidence. No single piece by itself is determinative, but you put it all together. And the fact that the Chinese to date have not yet produced the animal, show us the animal that was the originator of this. They've yet to do that, almost 3 years after. And I think that it becomes really compelling. And you start to understand why some of our agencies and government believe, in fact, the Department of Energy and even the FBI have said that they believe that this was a lab accident. I think tomorrow we'll have something to contribute to that I think further builds that case.
Yeah, big story, huh? I don't know where you stand on the origins of COVID-19. This is something a lot of historians are going to be exploring for a long time to come. And, you know, what's wrong with saying, hey, no, it came from an accident. We apologize, right? Or what if it did come from a wet market? I mean, China has just, they have just remained completely, completely silent. Coming up in a few minutes, too, we're going to speak with the former prime minister of East Turkestan in exile. Salid Hudayar is going to be stopping by. There's a lot going on in China. They're racing to advance AI. They are still dealing with the situation of the Uyghurs. We've talked about surveillance. Now they're hoarding food. This is another fascinating story. If I have a chance, I'll get into that with you. But before we do, there was some news as I was walking into the studio here that I just think you need to know, and that is that Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, I know she's a very hyperbolic character, right? A lot of people either think she's great or they think she's insane. She introduced articles of impeachment against President Biden today. So they are trying to impeach President Joe Biden. And her main reason for doing so is that because of the number of people she claims are illegally crossing the border and thus endangering national security. And it's a valid point in this respect. I mean, my big concern with these porous borders are twofold. One, the poison that is saturating our country. It's coming across in the forms of fentanyl. Thousands of Americans are dying every week. It's tragic, the amount of people that are losing their lives. And secondly, we know there's been a lot of gotaways. I mean, how many people have they caught already on the terror watch list? And imagine the crimes that they could perpetrate here in this country and the suffering and the loss of life that could ensue. So it is a valid point. I have a real border. That's my biggest issue with the borders. But that's what she claims is one of the reasons why she introduced articles for impeachment. She's filed similar impeachment articles against the Attorney General, Merrick Garland. She's done the same thing for FBI Director Christopher Wray and the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. But the White House has dismissed the articles as what they call trolling. Another interesting move, Representative Anna Luna of Florida has filed a resolution to have Representative Adam Schiff of California, she wants to have him expelled from Congress. Why? Well, she says he lied. She wants him expelled for lying to the American people over the claims that former President Donald Trump had colluded with Russia on his campaign after the Durham report showed that never happened. And look, there was a tremendous animus between Schiff and Trump. And clearly, you know, the problem I have with this whole situation is, you know, you claim you had evidence and you didn't. So in some respects, you lied. You lied not just to, you know, sully the reputation of the president, but really in an attempt to really try to get him out of office, maybe have him, you know, indicted. Who knows what you wanted to do? Ultimately, they didn't want him to become president again. And this was all, you know, driven by political ideology. And that's the real problem I have with it. I don't think anything's going to come from these things, but Representative Anna Luna of Florida, you know, filed a resolution to have Schiff of California expelled. I don't think that'll happen. Marjorie Taylor Greene, if you're just joining me, filing articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden. Boy, a lot of presidents being impeached, right? It's crazy. A little bit of good news, all right? How about that? Out in Los Angeles, remember we were sharing this story about the L.A. Dodgers, and we're saying, what's the matter with them, right? They were going to give what they call the Community Hero Award to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, and this is a real mockery of Catholic nuns and really of your Catholic faith. Well, a lot of heat came from that, a lot of talk, and ultimately the L.A. Dodgers have decided not to give that award to these sisters. So I just want to say thank you for your prayers. If you prayed, I know we did pray for that. And if you made a difference, if you said, hey, enough is enough. So they gave into the pressure to now disinvite this group, the anti-Catholic group on Pride Night. And question is, what's been the response? Take a listen to this report. This comes from ABC 7 in Los Angeles.
The people who are responding this way to the sisters don't know who we are.
Sister Roma, a longtime member of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, says Wednesday is an emotional day. The Los Angeles Dodgers disinvited the group from being honored at the team's Pride Night ceremony in June, claiming the group has been the source of some controversy.
People are reacting with hate, and it's just unfortunately very typical of the climate that we see today.
The religious advocacy group Catholic Vote first expressed concerns about the sisters being honored late last week. They say the group mocks real nuns. This week, other Catholic groups and Florida Senator Marco Rubio also called on the Dodgers to pull their invite. Senator Rubio sent a letter to the MLB commissioner saying, "It would be an outrage and a tragedy if the MLB, in pursuit of modern, secular, and indeed anti-religious values, rebuked that faith and the millions of believing fans who cherish the sport." Following Wednesday's announcement, the president of Catholic Vote said he was pleased by the decision, writing, "While we continue to wonder how such a group was selected in the first place, this incident should serve as a wake-up call for all religious believers. Unchecked woke corporations have no qualms about exploiting people of faith."
Yeah, there you go. Good news. Congratulations. And I am delighted to hear that. I want to pass a little bit of that along. One other quick story here, and then the former prime minister of East Turkestan and exile is going to be joining me. Target, right? We reached out to Mark Hoke today. We were going to put him on the air. I don't know if you remember him. He was arrested by the FBI in the middle of the night, drug out of his home for being outside of an abortion clinic and I guess pushing back a clinic worker after he was harassing his young son. I just saw another story, and I'll see if we can't follow up on this for you tomorrow, a little bit later. But there was a story of the FBI, two agents with the FBI now, visiting the childhood home of another pro-life activist. A coincidence? It could be. I'm not making anything of this. I just want to put it on your radar. They told the woman's mother they wanted to speak to her. And Patrick, I don't know, we have audio of that? Do we have audio of that? I don't know whether we have that or not. Patrick's going to grab that for you. But Elise Ketch is a member of a pro-life group. They believe abortion's murder, that it is a human child. And gained prominence after this group exposed the bodies of five preemie-sized little aborted babies known as the Five. They found them in a clinic in Washington, D.C. And all of a sudden, the FBI is now showing up at her childhood home. Check this out. Listen to the audio.
Hi, we're looking for Elise.
I'm sorry, she's not here. Can I ask what this is in regards to?
Yeah, sure. We're both with the FBI.
Okay.
We just need to speak with her regarding some information that was sent in to us.
Okay. Well, she doesn't live here.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, she's my daughter, but this isn't her residence currently.
Okay. Do you mind giving us her residence or her phone number by chance?
Yeah. Can, hold on just a second.
Sure. She's not in any trouble. We just have information that we need to ask her about.
Okay. Here. Do you mind if I take a picture of your badges?
Unfortunately, we're not allowed to have anyone take our pictures.
Can I see it again, please?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you can always call our office, too, and they can verify our employment, because it is weird. Not every day you get a knock on the door from the FBI.
No, and I'm, like, in a meeting upstairs, so I wasn't trying to not answer. Well, yeah, I was trying not to answer the door. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, whoever's at the door is being, like, uber persistent. Give me a minute.
Sorry.
So, no, that's okay.
We can leave you our office number if you'd like to call.
Yeah, let me do that. That sounds good. So can you tell me what you said it's in regards to?
We would tell you all the information because, like I said, she's not in any trouble. But just out of respect for her, we'd like to speak with her first. And then if she feels like talking to you, which I'm sure she will because it's nothing, you know, then yeah.
All right.
So it is part of the exchange. It goes on. And, you know, maybe they're just doing their job. I want to put that out there for you. I thought the mother was incredibly calm. You have the FBI checking up on one of your kids. I thought she handled herself well. But again, the FBI checking up on pro-lifers. I just go back to a point I keep making. And that is that as of 2 days ago, there have been at least 87 attacks on pregnancy resource centers, 157 attacks on Catholic churches. Ever since the Dobbs case was leaked in May of last year, a building's been vandalized. There have been threats, right? If abortion isn't safe, neither of you. That's a terroristic threat. Making attacks on suspected pro-abortion, you know, making attacks on these pro-life centers and pregnancy centers and churches. And there's been almost no arrests at all on this. And yet we see them coming again to another pro-lifer pro-life home. And again, I don't want to twist this too much. Maybe they're just doing their job. Maybe there is something they need to talk to her about, but it just gives me pause when I see that, you know, it just gives me a little bit of pause. Thought I'd throw that out to you. We'll follow up, find out what it's all about and what ultimately came from that. But there you've got a woman who's making a difference, defending life, and then coming under the radar once again of the FBI. Target apparently is celebrating Pride Month early, too. One last story here. They rolled out a new line of clothing aimed at kids, and it's all gay-themed. It includes items meant for transgenderism. They're rolling out stuff like breast binders and packing underwear, and I don't want to be too graphic here. Newsmax was reporting, according to Target, that the collection featured activewear and swimwear and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm not going to go into the details of this, but I just want to put that on your radar. We talked about boycotts a couple of days ago, you know, how people are saying, hey, I'm not going to shop here or I'm not going to buy this product because of X, Y, or Z. Target, right in the mix, you know, so I don't know if that's one of your stores. If it is, I personally, you know, if I can, I avoid any store that advances something that's going to be detrimental to the cause of life or to our children or is an attack on our faith. But Target celebrating Pride Month early. We're not even there yet, right? It's weeks before, and they're rolling out a new line of clothing targeting the kids. Say a prayer for that one, too. Hey, let me change gears. I want to talk to you about one other story here. We were mentioning China a little bit earlier. And my colleague, Patrick Alok, who's on my board today, he and I were in studio here, and we were watching some international news. We saw a piece on the Uyghurs, and it's something we haven't talked about, but I think still needs some focus. Last month, I don't know if you remember, the Justice Department actually did something right. They arrested a couple of men from China, charged them with running Chinese police stations here in our country, right? Isn't that crazy? How can China have a police station on American soil? These two guys were arrested for allegedly establishing a station on East Broadway, right? It was known as the some branch of public security in China. But they were allegedly spying on Chinese nationals, making sure they weren't breaking Chinese laws here in the United States. So China has similar stations, supposedly. It's been reported. They claim around 100 of them in other countries around the world. But the New York Post, they're now reporting that there are probably more stations here in the U.S., or maybe one in your neck of the woods. There's a group based in Madrid called Safeguard Defenders, and they say that there's another one in New York City, also one in L.A., and they've also found a number of these overseas service stations in San Francisco, in Houston, Texas, even in cities in Nebraska and in Minnesota. And no other country has anything like this going on. So they may be spying on their citizens, you know, in foreign countries, I'm assuming what they're doing. But who has the audacity, right, to set up a police station for that particular purpose? I'm joined right now by Salih Hudayar. He's prime minister of East Turkestan's government in exile. That's a government formed in 2004 in Washington, D.C. East Turkestan refers to the area of that the Chinese call Xinjiang, and it is composed mostly of Uyghur people, and you can find more about them at east-turkestan.net. The prime minister's back once again. Prime Minister, thank you for your time. Thanks for all that you do. It's good to talk with you once again.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you here. I want to talk to you. We talked Uyghurs a lot. I still see that I'd like to follow up on that a little bit in a few moments based on a report I just saw. But I want to talk to you about China and having these police stations in countries around the world. I don't know how this works. So maybe you can inform me on this, but why are other countries tolerating this? I mean, how do you establish a police station on foreign soil?
Well, I mean, these are essentially intelligence collection points. Officially, you know, the Chinese government calls it overseas police stations, but they're essentially, police intelligence collection points or sites where the Chinese government, you know, brings in, dissidents that are living overseas, you know, in countries like the United States, where they, you know, coerce them, they threaten them, they intimidate them. They'll have, you know, a computer set up where they'll be, you know, speaking with Chinese officials inside China, and alongside that Chinese official will be, you know, their members of their family, you know, alongside the Chinese police. And so, and their family members will often be crying, you know, please stop whatever you're doing, or please listen to whatever they're saying. And this is how it operates. And in many cases, they, use different types of places for cover, from restaurants to, you know, other businesses that will, you know, on appearance to the normal, you know, outside public will, you know, appear like a normal restaurant or a normal business. But behind that, you know, behind the scenes, what's really happening is, you know, this intelligence site being run.
So do you have any concern about your own safety being here in the States?
Well, I do, but at the same time, I'm a bit more careful than most. Yeah. I've been, you know, repeatedly surveilled even outside my house by unknown people, and, you know, Asian-looking people in unmarked cars, to, you know, being, you know, followed even in the streets of Washington, D.C., and even in, you know, the streets of Brussels, where I was going to meet with European Parliament. I've had, you know, I've received continuous, you know, threats, both in person, online, through calls, through, you know, handwritten letters. You know, they also tried to intimidate me by, you know, shooting out my window when I wasn't at home, to all these different things. And this is, unfortunately, I've gotten used to it, which is not, you know, something that you should be used to, but this is the reality of life. And I'm a bit more careful in terms of, you know, where I go, who I meet with, or where I meet with people, what I eat, and so forth.
So, yeah, obviously, the Chinese nationals here in the U.S. have connections with ordinary American citizens, and I don't want to just throw a broad net and think anybody who's from China is a spy. Should Americans have a heightened sense of, I don't know, concern or sensitivity to Chinese nationals now, or are they in danger of being targeted by the Chinese government? You know, I don't even know how you discern the two.
Well, most of the Chinese nationals that are even, you know, living abroad, unfortunately, they too are victims of the Chinese government. And even Uyghurs like myself, you know, there are other Uyghurs who are, you know, coerced to spy on other Uyghurs because, again, the Chinese government, you know, many of the Uyghurs have, you know, relatives still in East Turkestan, and assumingly many of the Chinese people, you know, that are here in the United States or elsewhere have relatives in China. Yeah. And the CCP and the Chinese government, they operate in a very notorious manner in which they, you know, hold your relatives as hostage and use them against you to, you know, to get you to work for them. So in many cases, you know, there are numerous instances when some, you know, Uyghurs in Turkey, they spoke out and said, you know, I've been forced to spy on other Uyghurs because the Chinese government held my relatives captive, my parents captive in the case of one individual. And, you know, I've been doing this for years, and there are hundreds more like me. I'm not the only one doing this. And he was about to give an interview to BBC. And 2 days before the BBC interview, he was about to meet with BBC journalist. They shot him, you know, an unknown gunman shot him in the streets of Istanbul. And that sent a sign, you know, a signal to other potential Uyghurs who, you know, are spying for the Chinese government, not most likely being coerced to spy for the Chinese government. To, you know, whose conscience is getting to them, to might have potentially spoken out to keep them silent as well. I fear that this is how the Chinese government operates with the Chinese community as well.
Yeah, no kidding. I was watching a piece on, it was Sky News, some international news just recently, and there was a British journalist that was over in China, and it seems like some of these facilities that once held these Uyghurs are now empty. There's a lot of them where they don't know where they ended up. What's the current situation of those Muslim Uyghurs right now that are being detained, imprisoned, incarcerated, I guess the Chinese say, re-educated. We've talked about how they're slave labor and also being abused. What's the current status? Has anything changed?
Well, not much has changed. I mean, the Chinese government has gotten better at hiding the reality, to hiding, the scope of the genocide that's going on. For example, the Chinese government claims that, after 2019, after a lot of immense political and economic pressure and outrage from the international community, that everyone in the concentration camps, quote, graduated. Yeah. Yet, it's like, where did these people that graduated, where did these millions of people go? After that, there were reports that, millions of people were given official sentences for so-called separatism, extremism, and other crimes. So a portion of them, were given official prison sentencing, while other, reports show that many of them, upwards of 500,000, were sentenced, secretly transferred into Chinese provinces, into prisons and camps inside China proper, where, the Western world won't think twice to look about.
Yeah,
and then there's, on top of that, people dying from, diseases and other conditions from torture and organ harvesting in these camps. So nothing has really changed. The appearance has changed.
Yeah, it's a modern day concentration camps and even genocide. And you're right, there's not a whole lot that the world is doing right now. I know there's some in the States, including yourself, that are trying to raise awareness to it. And I try to give voice to it as well. I only have a moment or two left. Just a final thought, if you could, on these Chinese prisons or jails, I should say, being set up here in our country. What do we know now that they've come to light? What is the U.S. government doing? How long have they been there? And, what's going to happen next?
Well, I think many of these sites have been there for years. And I think because of the U.S. government wanted to keep relations smooth with China, they weren't really addressing it. Now that, it's come to the public eye, the government is forced to act upon it, but not much is really being done. You see a few, individuals being arrested, or one or two sites being closed, whereas, there's potentially hundreds or more operating across the United States and other parts of the world. But the government needs to, seriously address this issue, needs to focus on, intensifying counterintelligence activities inside the United States, and ensuring that, foreign enemies, adversaries like China are not able to, violate the rights of American citizens or the rights of, people who are seeking refuge in the United States.
You got it. Well, I want to thank you. If people want to get a hold of you or track the work that you're doing, what's the best way to do that, Prime Minister?
Best way to do that is just to follow us on social media at ET National or at ETExileGov.
Okay, ET National or ET, what was the other one?
ExileGov.
ExileGov, okay. My thanks to Salih Hudayar. He is Prime Minister of East Turkestan, government in exile. And say a prayer for him and for all that he's going through as well, certainly for his safety. I've got to take a short pause here. I'm going to be back with more in just a moment. Of course, if you want to get in, feel free to dial in. The number's 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. And, of course, the chaplet is coming up in just about 30 minutes or so. So if you have a special need or intention, get it to Patrick. Maggie is still on her honeymoon. You can give it to him on Twitter at Drew Mariani Show. Follow me also at Drew Mariani. And, of course, you can call into the studio and get on board. When I return, let's talk a little bit. Monsignor Rossetti will join us. If you are battling fear or dealing with trying times, you're going to want to hear this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so good to take a look at all that's unfolding in the world and around us through the eyes of our faith. And that's really something I want to do today. You know, I say it all the time, and look, I'm a weak man. I try to be a good man. I try to be saintly. I try to be a man of faith. I try to walk on water at times. I don't mean that in a literal sense, figuratively. And many times God's put me to the test, and I find that, the faith wanes. The fear conquers. You can't do that. And I told the Lord, I refuse to give in to fear and anxiety. I refuse to do it. I will trust in you. I will trust in you. That's my motto. That's my mantra. That's what I live by. And I know that you could be in a situation right now where you're facing some really difficult times. Maybe the doctor's diagnosis was not good. Maybe your finances are really bad right now, and you're hearing about the cost of gas going up, right? Maybe inflation keeps biting at your paycheck. Maybe the war in the Ukraine right now is giving you anxiety. There's fear, perhaps, of a third world war. Maybe it's the addiction in the family or the broken marriage or relationship. It's easy to give in to fear, to wonder what the future is going to be like for you, let alone for your children, right? That is, I think, a great spiritual test for us. And this is your opportunity to really exercise trust in God, to show him how much you love him, and to really defeat the evil one. When we pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, what do we say? We say, Jesus, I trust in you, right? We repeat that over and over again. Those are very simple words. And when fear rises, that's my advice. You just say that simple five-word prayer over and over again. Jesus, I trust in you. See, the evil one of the great tools in his toolbox is fear. He likes to foment it. He likes to create it. He likes to rob you of that trust that the Lord wants you to have. Fear and anxiety over the conflicts in the world, fear over what's going on in your home or what's going to happen in your future. What did Christ tell us, right? He says, be not afraid. Be not afraid, because when you allow fear to overtake life, you're actually blocking out love. St. John said that there is no fear in love, that perfect love casts out fear, since fear has to do with punishment. And he who fears is not perfected in love. I came across a very interesting entry from an exorcist. I just want to share this with you, and then Monsignor Rossetti is going to be stopping by. He's the president and founder of the St. Michael Center for Spiritual Renewal. It's a nonprofit Catholic organization that oversees exorcisms. He's also a licensed psychologist. He's a research associate professor at Catholic University of America at CUA. And he's the author of The Diary of an American Exorcist, Demons, Possession, and the Modern Day Battle Against Ancient Evil. If you want to read it, check that out. But let me share with you. I've gotten this email from this exorcist diary. And the headline today was Satan Incites Fear, or whenever I received it, I forget what day it was. But let me just share this with you, okay? And then we'll talk about this reality. It begins, the exorcism stalled out. We were saying all the right prayers, but the process of liberation was going nowhere. As we looked into the cause, the afflicted person spoke about her fear of Satan. She was terrified. She was hesitant, responding to the prayers for fear of riling him and incurring his wrath. She's referring, of course, to Satan. Her fear was understandable. Through the exorcism, the demons were constantly threatening her. They would say, "We will get you tonight," they yelled in her brain. "We'll torture you. We'll drag you to hell." Then they promised her, "But if you stop the prayers, we'll leave you alone." It's a frightening thought, isn't it? Our Blessed Mother, in a very famous Marian apparition, said that the devil is strong with those who fear him and weak with those who despise him. I was also struck by another message of Our Lady. She says, the one who prays does not fear the future. The one who fasts does not fear evil. I think that's a solution for today, isn't it? It's prayer and fasting. Those are the two things we need to do. So, again, I'll just finish this final paragraph of this email that I received. It says, while we cannot confirm she said those words, they certainly ring true in our experience as exorcists. I told the terrified woman, in hell, the slaves of Satan cower in fear. As long as you do, you will never be free. An important part of the process of liberation is learning to trust Jesus. As the scriptures say, submit yourself to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. That's James 4:7. I'm joined right now by somebody who understands this intimately.
Again, he's the author of The Diary of an American Exorcist. It's my delight to talk with and to tap into the expertise of Monsignor Stephen Rossetti. Monsignor, thanks again for giving me your time. Good afternoon.
Hello, Drew. It's great to be with you.
Always good to talk to you. I was struck by that particular passage, and it really spoke to me. I mean, one of the great tools of the evil one is fear, isn't it? And yet today, you know, we look at the rising cost of gas. People wonder how they're going to feed their kids or get to work. You know, we look at the potential of a third world war. I mean, so many areas that fear can overcome. And I know you wrote recently about how fear and anxiety are these tools. How do they separate us from God? Maybe take us through that. Explain how Satan uses this and the ways that we can rise above it.
Well, first of all, Satan likes to think he is God. Of course he isn't. And wants to make people think he's all-powerful. Like he said to Jesus in the temptation, fall down and worship me. And of course, Jesus said, you know, worship is for God alone. So Satan wants us to worship him, to fear him. And because he's evil, fully evil, the way he rules in hell and those who are subject to him is through fear and intimidation. He doesn't love anyone. He loves himself. And so he tries to make people worship him, and he controls through generating fear.
So obviously the people of the Ukraine, those who are either in war-torn countries or are being persecuted for their faith, they live in fear of what could happen to them. That's sure. A little bit different, though. I mean, that's a realistic fear, right? And, yeah. And sometimes, and I want to qualify, I mean, fear is not a bad thing. Sometimes we should be, you know, fearful of going into a bad situation and avert that situation. But
right, you know, a certain fear is healthy.
Right.
You know, to be afraid of, you know, falling off a building or something. Sure,
right, exactly.
And they say, as they say in foxholes, I mean, everyone's frightened.
That's right.
But the brave person is the one who makes an act of the will and say, you know, you said earlier, Jesus, I trust in you. I choose to trust in God, even though some motion of fear might be inside me.
That's right. And that's a good point. It's so true. Just really, trust is an act of the will, isn't it? I mean, I might say, oh, yeah. My gosh, the math for my finances don't add up. I don't know how I'm going to keep the house or the car. Or the doctor told me, yeah, I have stage 4 cancer. You know, I only have 6 months to live. I mean, those things sometimes are really hard to get beyond. We put our trust in the temporal, and yet God can do anything. He can certainly, he's the author of all the laws of nature. He can suspend them and can change them. Placing trust in God when you can't see beyond the situation that you're facing, that's hard. So what advice would you give to those in that situation? Now, how do you get the vision that there's more to your life than the situation in front of you? Or maybe I should rephrase it. You know, I should say there's more to God, right? I mean, how do we get people to believe that, to get out of the boat, to walk on the water, to put their trust in God?
Well, one thing, for example, is that the more we pray, receive the sacraments, live a holy life, the more we have a deep internal sense of God's presence in us. You know, faith is not just some sort of vacuous thing that with nothing to support it. No, actually, there is this spiritual sense inside of us that we nurture, the sense of God's presence. And Jesus said that, my peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. So there is this internal sense of peace and the Lord's presence which abides in our hearts. And so when the storm comes, you know, when the wind blows and the house is built on rock, as the scriptures say, and so that internal sense of peace, that presence of God anchors us even in the midst of a very frightening situation.
So, you know, we talk about exercising trust, right? And it is a type of exercise. It's like using the muscles of our body. I think the more you put your trust in God, the stronger, maybe even the easier, I guess. It's like virtue, you know? I mean, practicing, creating good habits takes exercise and discipline. And I think trust is the same way. I don't know what your techniques are for it. I mean, how do you do that? You know, what's your advice for building that spiritual muscle, so to speak?
Yeah, one thing I would say is focusing on the present.
Yeah.
One of the real things that can scare us is if we focus on the future. And how many times we worry about something in the future that never actually happens? So, as the scriptures say, you know, do not worry about tomorrow. Each day has enough trouble of its own, Matthew 6:34. So the idea is to focus on the present and to just bite off the present. Do what you can now, and that becomes more manageable. When we start, fantasizing or catastrophizing, if we will, about the future, then it spins out of control.
Yeah. My guest today is Monsignor Rossetti. If you want to join us, you can dial in right now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. We'll take a few of your calls. We're approaching the twilight of the show, as I like to say, the final few moments. So, Mary in Illinois, you're first up on deck. We'll get your call and take all your calls when I return. Again, 888-914-9149, taking a look at a spiritual response to what's happening. How do we rise above the fear of our current day? It's one of the powerful tactics of the evil one. He makes you want to believe that he's more powerful and that the future's a dark one for you. I believe the future's a bright one, especially when we exercise trust and we walk with the Lord. I'll be right back.
The hope lives here. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
When we're hungry, love will keep us alive.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I would die for you.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. I wish I could hang out with you another 3 hours, but I only have a few moments left with you today. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking today with Monsignor Stephen Rossetti, president and founder of the St. Michael Center for Spiritual Renewal and the author of Diary of an American Exorcist, Demons, Possession, and the Modern-Day Battle Against Ancient Evil. We're taking a look at how to rise above the great fear that seems to predominate so many households and so many hearts. And, of course, when you see the news, anxiety can rise, fear can predominate it, the threats of world war, the rising cost of gas and inflation, all the other problems, COVID. It's really easy to be overcome, but we're to walk with the Lord, right? I often think of that great psalm where you walk through the shadow of death, right? And yet you fear no evil. The Lord is with you. He's on your side, and you are not to fear. And that should be the takeaway today. So don't give in to fear. It's one of the great tactics of the evil one. Monsignor, I want to get to the phones. Before I jump to the first few phone calls here, I'd love your insight on some tips, some practical tips, to when we begin to encounter this type of feeling or we feel overwhelmed, that we can maybe employ. Or is there something you'd recommend to those who are listening to employ both physically or mentally?
Sure. We are body, mind, and spirit. And you can sort of treat anxiety on any different level. You can start with the spirit and pray. You can start with the psyche and remind yourself to trust in Jesus. Or one way to attack it is from the body. The body can store up the anxiety and the tension. And so the idea is that when the body relaxes and it trusts, if you will, then it can inform and help the mind and the spirit. So what do we tell people as psychologists? We say, look, breathe. One of the first things, slow, deep breaths. One of the first things that people do when they're frightened is they hyperventilate. They breathe fast and shallowly. So long, slow, deep breaths. And so oftentimes in a clinical session, I'll have them breathe deeply, big, long, slow, deep breaths. And then I'll have them exercise and relax their muscles. So we don't realize how much tension we carry around all the time in our muscles. Sure. And when we actually relax them for a moment, it relaxes the mind and the spirit as well.
That's great advice. Mary in Illinois, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Monsignor Rossetti. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a particular question. If there is some kind of obsession going on, and it is the enemy, and you, your strong prayer life, daily mass, weekly confession, all this, and battling it in addition, and it continues, how do you offer that kind of, basically, how do you really offer that kind of suffering? Mm-hmm. Because it's a very difficult suffering.
Yeah. Right. The suffering of the mind, as you're saying, Mary, yes. And Satan takes our normal, we all have a little bit of fear, of course, it's part of being human. And then he sort of manipulates it and exaggerates it. And so what's called demonic obsession is what you're referring to. That so Satan stokes the fear in our minds. And so one way to help treat that is to focus the mind on holy things like meditation, reading the scriptures, for example. That can have a very calming effect. Of course, I love Eucharistic adoration. I think there's incredible graces there. And one of those graces is to really fill the mind with Jesus and cast out the darkness.
All right. Mary, thank you very much. You know, you talk about oppression from the evil one. Have you ever seen, I'm sure you're probably familiar with, The Exorcism of Emily Rose? You familiar with that story, Father?
Because it's based on a real case.
And she, well, maybe you put it in context for a minute. This is a woman who was actually possessed, right, by the evil one, but she offered that suffering up. Am I correct?
Yes, and a German young woman, she offered it up. There are some concerns about the way the case was dealt with.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, she died from malnutrition. But she felt that she was a suffering soul. Now, that would be unusual in the sense that most possessed people are not possessed by just simply being suffering souls. Although St. Mary of Jesus Crucified, the little Arab from Lebanon, she was one. But any one of us, any of our sufferings, we can offer them up to the Lord, and the Lord turns that into grace.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's go back to the phones. Again, 888-914-9149, just a few minutes left, but we'll go to New Mexico next. Maria, thank you for waiting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, my son has been for years having mental problems. Everything has gotten worse. I've also seen evil involved. But sadly, even some of the priests don't believe in it, don't think it's, you know, and even, you know, like medications don't help. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, and right now he's facing a very serious, he's in court right now, facing a very serious case.
I'm sorry to hear
that. Right now, at this moment.
Oh, Maria, we're sorry to hear that.
It's a terrible suffering. I'm sorry, Maria, that when parents have their child have problems. You know, it's a difficult discernment. As someone who's both an exorcist and a psychologist, it can be a difficult discernment, especially when people are in the say, late teens, early 20s, whether or not they really have a mental illness or whether they have a spiritual problem or maybe both. And so then it takes some time to help discern that and apply the best remedy. What we've typically found, by the way, is the best thing typically tends to be a combination of both, good psychotherapy, appropriate medications, as well as some healing prayers.
Yeah. Maria, let's pray a Hail Mary right now for your son and his court case, for his liberation, for his conversion. We'll pray. Dear Lady, we just entrust him to you and everyone who's facing these types of situations. I'm going to pray for this mother and all mothers and fathers who suffer because of the path that their child has taken. And we just ask for your mercy. And dear Lady, we turn to you as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Father, and may son. Almighty God bless you and your son and entire family, Father, and all suffering people, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen.
It's really tough. You know, I was listening to this mother here, and her son is having those issues, but we prayed the chaplet about an hour ago, and I hear so many people call up with, there was a 12-year-old girl, my producer shared one of the Twitter intentions that came in, who tried to commit suicide, 12 years old. I mean, how do you do that at 12? You're a child still at 12 years old. And yet we see this incredible rise, a 300% increase in suicide today. We see anxiety levels, Monsignor, through the roof, and depression too. It's almost an epidemic. I'd almost call it a pandemic. It's happening all across the world. How do you discern what's going on? Why the rise today? Have we opened ourselves up more to the demonic? Do you have an explanation for what you're seeing in terms of the scourge, if you will, of anxiety in the culture and in the hearts of so many people?
Well, in the pandemic, the CDC has said that there's been a quadrupling of anxiety and depression. So that's an obvious exacerbation of anxiety and depression is the pandemic. But also, you know, I think that as people stop practicing the faith, as society becomes sadly more isolated and more violent, it creates a whole unsafe frightening environment. And then as a as a breakdown in the family as well, it creates an instability in a child's development. So there's so many factors these days, which were not around when I was a child, right, that really I think we can understand why young people are suffering today.
It's unbelievable. I try to get my head around what we're seeing is crippling on so many people. Well, Monsignor, I want to thank you for your work and for your writing. It's always good to speak to a psychologist as well as an exorcist and to get that balance and that clarity. So we'll see what happens here. We'll see what happens with Vladimir Putin. I'm praying with a lot of our world leaders, too. I'm sure Satan would love to get to and influence world leaders to foment even greater wars. Is there anything we can do personally to help bring peace to the world? I mean, what would you suggest?
Well, you know, I think Our Lady is, I just have this great confidence that despite what Satan's trying to do in the Ukraine and Russia, I think Our Lady is all over this, as we say. I think she spread her mantle over the Ukraine, and I think she's on top of this. So I pray every day to be a small grain of mustard seed supporting her ministry and all that she wants to accomplish. And part of that, of course, is bringing peace.
Well, I love it. Well, Monsignor, thank you again for your time. Great to have you with us, and keep us in your mass, okay, in your prayers. We'll do the same for you.
Thanks, Drew. God bless you and your ministry.
God bless you. Thank you so much. That's Monsignor Stephen Rossetti. I always enjoy talking to him. Very balanced man. And please say a prayer for him and for his priesthood.
We're about to pray the chaplet. You can join me for that right after this.